balance because it is purely masculine sexual energy.
There's also the egg and the dart.
That's right, absolutely.
Life and death.
That's right. So now, if you see the wand come up in a reading, whether or not the issue is sexual, whether or not the issue is a relationship, it doesn't matter. Buried in the energy of any wand card is a reference to masculine. Is the reference to masculine sexual energy. It's always there. It doesn't make any difference what the card is or what the issue is. Just like intention and will and power and fire, so too sexual energy, this particular kind of sexual energy is there, and the implications of the straight line. And therein hangs the tale, because as far as I know, as far as I understand it, most of the philosophies of the world agree, most of the spiritualities of the world agree, that the only energy in the universe is sexual energy. And all sexual energy can be seen in terms of the relationship between line and circle, between straight and curved. And so in the wand, you're looking at that. That's a symbol of that whole aspect of things. Seems like I've reduced everybody to total silence, haven't I? That wasn't my intention, guys. Come on, let me hear some philosophical considerations here. Donna, you have been sitting quietly in the background, and I've been merciful to you.
And I appreciate that, too.
Oh, good. You want me to keep doing that?
But it's over, right?
Okay.
But I think that you know, you can see the essence of masculine sexual energy in just about everything we named here.
Absolutely.
I haven't gone back up to look at my list of words. I've, you know, got it on my laptop here, mm-hmm. So I'm at the bottom taking notes dutifully. But if I recall correctly, just about everything, that just kind of brings it all together there, it looks like.
Absolutely, it does. The thing that, remember I asked a little while ago, what was the common denominator between a paintbrush, a pen, and a baton? This would also include a scalpel. If I include the scalpel in that, and so we have four things now.
And the quill.
And the quill and the laser pointer. Mm-hmm. What do they all have in common?
They're erect and...
Yes,
linear.
They are.
They can all penetrate something.
They are. They have all those things in common. I guess you're not going to find it unless I tell you, because there's too many ways.
They all have the power to create and destroy.
There
they
is
can
that
do
too.
Harm and they can do good.
Absolutely.
You use the tip at the
yeah.
end part.
Say that again?
The tip of it, the end of it is
that's
the
right. The tip
part.
Of it is the
yeah.
is the action part. But let me give you an interesting thought. Every one of them, every one of those things is an instrument with a handle. The handle is the wand. On a sword, buried in the essence of the sword, which is a whole other suit and a whole other energy, the energy of the wand can be found in the sword, in the handle. The blade of the sword is what we usually think of when we think of a sword. That's what makes it effective. That's what makes it a sword. It's the handle that allows us to wield it.
Well, all of those things would have to be employed by the hand.
That's right. The handle, think of it, the word handle is made out of the word hand. It's a way in which the hand has of grasping what's going on and imparting to what's going on its own will and intention, which is an extension of the will and intention of the mind and the spirit behind it. So all of these things have a handle. So whenever you look at anything that contains or has to it a handle, you're looking at the energy of the wand. Think of an axe handle. Think of the handle of an iron, you know, just the kind of iron that you iron a shirt with on an ironing board. Even though it doesn't look in the least bit like a wand, the handle is the wand energy in it. Anything that allows you to pick it up and manipulate it and direct it and control it is wand's energy. So you're looking at issues of manipulation and control as well as the extension of will.
Well, one of the things that we don't have on this list, which is kind of obvious from that point of view, is the broom.
Oh, my God, of course.
Yeah.
How interesting. And does not the broom allow us to fly? Under the right circumstances.
Yeah.
It's really interesting that the broom should have become the feminine version of an escape to freedom by means of flight. I mean, think of the interesting, you know, psychological implications of that one. I mean, it might be something that when thinking about, women might find just a tad uncomfortable. I don't know. Anyway, it's interesting that in that way, a woman is able to manipulate her own masculine energy. That is, the broom and the flight of the broom and all the different aspects of the symbolism of the broom are versions of masculine energy in a woman's life under her control. A very interesting thought. Actually, a woman has, by means of the implements that she uses to maintain the life in the way that she does it, all the implements that she uses have that masculine energy embedded in them in the form of handles. If you thought of your own home and the way in which you cook, sew, clean, and generally speaking, create an environment that traditionally has been given to women to do. It's not that everybody does it these days, but traditionally that was done. All of those things are done by means of masculine energy, by means of the masculine end of energy anyway, by means of a handle. When you look at a card in wands, any card, you're looking at the ability to handle, to manipulate, to direct.
That's another interesting permutation of that word. I can handle it.
That's right. Absolutely. So, let me see. What things have we not looked at here in the way of interesting stuff? Oh, well, I mentioned the scalpel. Somebody who scalpel
that
was
Abby's, I think.
No, scalpel was Donna's, I believe.
Yeah, that was my.
Oh no,
yeah,
somebody.
That was my suggestion.
Oh,
right,
your
right.
Suggestion.
Yeah,
from Donna
someone who.
To you. Okay.
Yeah.
So Don, scalpel. Tell us what you thought of when you were thinking of scalpel in terms of wand. What's that about?
I was thinking of it in terms of healing, actually.
Mm.
And in terms of sort of being able to remove something that isn't really needed anymore,
mm-hmm.
or that isn't conducive to the healing or the growth process.
Mm. There in the scalpel is something that blends the sword and the wand in a very interesting way, because the scalpel, to be effective, needs an edge, which a wand by itself doesn't have.
Right.
Wand does not have an edge. So in the same way that an axe handle is the wand's part, and the axe head is more of a sword's part, it cuts, it slices, it enters and penetrates and cuts below the surface, the scalpel too is a blending of energies. The head of the thing that the operative part doesn't have to be wands. The operative part of whatever is being directed can be any one of the suits. What's common to all of them is that they can't be wielded, they can't do their job without the handle. That's what's behind there. The scalpel is a beautiful example of something that needs the most perfect handling. A slip is deadly because of the implications of the blade. But a scalpel is a fabulous injection of energy into a carefully controlled process. Good. Let me see. What else have we got here? Does anybody have... while I'm talking about all of this, does anybody have any additional material to add to this? Because I was supposed to let you guys do all the talking. I guess that's just not going to happen.
I was thinking of in terms of handles with the suit of cups, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, if there's a hand... By the way, you notice, at least in the weight deck, there is no handle on the cup. Well, there is a stem, but... actually, there's a stem. There's that part that joins the cup to the base. Mm-hmm. Could the cup stand on its own?
Yes.
Yes.
Good. The cup is not does not require a handle. It does not. It can be perfectly effective without a handle. How interesting. There is no need for a straight line in a cup.
Or a pentacle.
Or a pentacle. Absolutely. Now, a sword does. Sword is the straight line is embedded in the sword. It's part of the nature of the sword.
Well, that's also the other suit of masculine energy.
That's right. That's right. That's another story. But in this case, in this case. The cup does definitely not need that. The circle does not need the line to perform its function. Good. Take something like music. I'm going to ask you directly, Ruthann, why music?
Why music? Well, my own personal experience with music is that it's very energetic, and also because it's based on vibration, and that's really what it is at the core. And with the wand, you're talking about vibration, the vibration that makes things grow. Picture a tuning fork also. When you strike the tuning fork and it makes the tone, vibration is what actually makes that tone. And any particular tone in music is made of that.
Would you say that that the at the root of music is vibration?
Mm-hmm.
And would you say that a vibration, a steady, continuous vibration, produces a tone?
Yeah.
And would you say then that all music comes essentially from the struck chord of some kind of vibrating material?
Yeah. Well, when you, especially when you're talking about instruments, that's definitely true. Or singing, you've got the vocal cords, which also are set up. You know, it's a vibration.
A string then becomes a wand, as well as a pole or a stick, or a tuning fork.
Mm-hmm.
If you stretch a string tight and vibrate it and pluck it, it also creates a vibration that has exactly the same effect. And of course, a stretched string is certainly a straight line.
Right. And also, if you're looking at a piano or hammer dulcimer or something like that, where you have strings that are struck with wooden mallets, which are little, like little wands.
And then you have the violin, which is a series of strings stretched tight, and the sound is created by running another form of straight line across the first straight line,
mm-hmm.
in the form of the bow.
Right.
But then, if music has that quality of being a struck chord, of being a vibrating straight line. By the way, is it possible, do you think, to create a vibration like that from a circle?
Well, yeah, sure.
A gong?
A gong.
If you run your finger around the edge of a crystal goblet,
mm-hmm.
with water,
mm-hmm.
you'll get a tone.
Can you create a steady vibration and tone by running your finger back and forth across something, or just in one direction? If you were running your finger around the edge of a goblet, intending to create a tone from it, would you do it by going back and forth or by going in the same direction?
No, same direction.
Because what I'm getting at is that even though the goblet is a circle, the direction is one direction. It's a straight line from the point of view that the intention goes in one way, and only one way. It doesn't go back and forth, it doesn't go round and round, it doesn't go up and down, it goes one way, although the vibration it produces goes back and forth. Anyway, the point that I was getting at here was that at the root of music is vibration, which is created by the vibration of a straight line, and in that, think of the ohm. There is, of course, a tradition in which the ohm is a vibration, which is the very first sound from which the entire universe is created. The vibration of the taut string in the form of the vocal cord. The whole entire thing, the whole ball of wax, the galaxies, space itself, and all the things contained therein come from a vibration, a tone. That tone is connected directly, could only come from, if there is a divinity of any sort whatsoever. Some people say yes, some people say no, and I don't want to impose my ideas of that on anybody. But if there is a divinity of any sort, the way in which the world comes to pass, the way in which divinity comes or becomes something, from being nothing at all, from being non-manifest, the way in which divinity becomes manifest is by a vibration, by a tone. And the tone is the struck wand. The very first energy. And that's why they say that the wand is connected with creativity. It's not connected with creativity, it's connected with creation. The wand is the beginning of everything. It's the very first manifestation. So when you look at the cards and wands come up, realize that in the wand is the beginning of a universe. The beginning of something, the beginning of all beginnings can be found in the wand. And every wand's card has in it, buried possibly deeper than any other aspect of it, is this Om sound, buried in the wand. And that's connected with fire, and that's connected with energy, and will, and intention, and manipulation, and handling. Hold on 1 second, guys.
Siren here.
Okay, so it made you a little uncomfortable. Why?
Because as I see sound being emitted, I can see it as a ripple in the water. For instance, if you take it through a stone in the water, the sound is like that ripple, but it actually, although it appears to be in a straight wave line, it's in a circle.
Absolutely. And the essence of the circle, before the circle happens, there is a point. Think of it. Just a point. At the center of the circle, in order for the circle to even exist, that circle comes out of the point, does it not?
Like the concept of the Big Bang.
Just like that. And in order for there to be a circumference, there needs to be a radius.
Okay.
There has to be an extension before the circle can expand. Before the ripples can happen, extension after extension after extension. And the full implications of that extension is a circle. The circle and the line are intimately bound together. They do not appear separately. The only reason that we talk of them separately is in order to understand them.
Right.
But there is no separation. The sexual energy of line and circle is inseparable. So only for our purposes here do we talk about one thing at a time, because we kind of have to. Good. Isn't that neat how it got out of that one? Oh, dear. Anyway, I'm sort of ashamed of myself. Sorry about that. Let me see. Is there anything else in all of this that possibly creates any discomfort? No? Do you guys feel, between you, does anybody feel uncomfortable in terms of giant abstracts? Because I know a lot of people, when they come to tarot, they tend to be very comfortable with the familiar and the down-to-earth. And when you get off into realms of giant abstraction, you know, vast reaches of space, and you know the voice of God intoning, you know, ohms and stuff, some people tend to get a little bit uncomfortable with that. Does anybody here feel anything along those lines?
I love it.
Me too.
Yeah,
me
too.
Oh, and I guess what we've done is we've attracted the right group, right? Well,
I'd be disappointed if it wasn't all of this.
Oh, I'm glad. I really am, because I really like to do this. And you remember we were talking earlier about how at the very, when I was really little, I liked to do secret decoder rings and stuff. Well, all the way through my life, I love to do nothing better. There's nothing I like better than sitting around with a bunch of people talking philosophy. I mean, we used to do this when we were kids. We used to sit around in the summertime on the stoops in Brooklyn, just in the little porches and things. And a bunch of the guys, you know, and even some of the girls would sit around, and, you know, we'd be 14, 15 years old, and we'd be discussing the nature of the universe. And that hasn't changed any either. So maybe one of the things that's involved with all of this is something as original as that. Something that starts from the very beginning and just goes right through life. So even though I don't usually think of myself as a person in whom wands is foremost, it's probably as original an intention as I've got. That's a really interesting thought.
Well, aren't you a Sagittarius?
Yes, and there is fire for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And the arrow, which is another kind of wand.
Ah, that's right. That's right. Absolutely. I hadn't thought of that, actually. Oh, well, all of this stuff is too tangled a web for me. I'm sorry. But, you know, one of this produces an interesting segue. The idea of intense... Oh, even that. Here's another word. You know, we were talking about burning before, since I mentioned that word intense. Let me give you one more thing to think about before I do this other thing. And that's the idea of intensity. The thing about wands is intensity. It's not wishy-washy. There's nothing in the least bit, what would you call it, sissy-like about wands. Wands is purely get up and do in everything. It's the thing that makes anything happen, anything at all that's going to happen. It's the spark that starts things off. And it's totally and completely intense. There's nothing to it. It's so pure, it's totally unalloyed with anything. It's the pure, intense will to exist. Something, by God, is going to happen, and I'm going to make it happen. And when a person, when an individual person is characterized by one of the court cards of wands, especially the Knight of Wands, you're looking at a person of enormous intensity and not to be fooled with. A person like that will sweep you off your feet. You know, a person like that is a glamour by himself or herself. Somebody like that shows up in your life, it's very hard to resist. They're so magnetic, so attractive, so magnificent. They whatever they want to do, you'll go along with them. It's really hard to resist. This is the really good-looking person who swings up in front of the club in a red convertible, especially the Ferrari.
Right now.
Huh?
I could use something like that.
Exactly. Everybody can use that. It's a wonderful thing. Who doesn't like that? It's a version of the knight on the white horse. In this case, it's the knight in the red Ferrari convertible. It's essentially the same thing. The only thing that you have to be aware of is that same intensity contains within it no thought. Guys, wands does not think. Wands takes no time off. Wands does not hesitate. Wands does not stand back and coolly appraise a situation. Wands just does.
Like James Bond.
Like James Bond. And you know one of the things that really makes James Bond so totally attractive is that he, in the movies, at least in my opinion, what he does when he does his fabulous, you know, things, especially at the beginning of a James Bond movie, there's almost always a scene where he does some totally, fabulously, unbelievable, amazing thing. He'll jump out of a plane with no parachute and somehow or other have no difficulty in landing perfectly and getting rid of three opponents at the same time. And he does this routinely. Every picture, it always opens up with a scene like that. And the reason why that happens is because he will make the leap, literally the leap of faith, right off a cliff, out of an airplane, out of a spaceship, it doesn't matter. He makes the leap with 120% intensity, with everything he's got and more, total faith in the outcome. Never a doubt, and if he dies, too bad. He's not worried about that. He gives it everything he's got in a split second without a thought. And there's something almost unbearably attractive about that. And then, of course, at the end of it, he picks himself up off the ground, if he's even fallen on the ground, brushes himself off, and his tuxedo is intact, and he's ready for a party. So that's wands, guys. Now, the interesting thing about that is because wands does not stop to think, because wands is as intense as it is and is so driven to action, there is in wands the implication of violence. Wands can be unbearably cruel without giving it a thought.
So the swords, though, how does that differ?
Swords is cruel usually with a purpose. Swords is cruel in the service of a cause. Swords is a public figure.
It would be more calculated also.
More calculated also, right. Wands is very personal. Wands is not interested in causes, only itself. Wands is a total egotist. Wands is concerned only with itself and its own motivations and its own desires, its own forward movement. And anything that stands in its way gets pummeled into a pulp.
Right. Like a volcano.
Absolutely. Just like that. Erupt, boom, gone, you're dead.
Right.
And it doesn't care.
And then afterwards, then you feel sorry.
That's right. Well, that's assuming that it's you and you have more things in you than that's just this exploding volcano,
yeah.
And you may have a reason to feel sorry.
Yeah, Judy,
well, I'm a Sagittarius too, and I understand that because I have to be very careful because when I go off, I go off.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it's like no ifs, ands, or buts. You just go off.
So that must make you something of a dangerous person on occasion.
If I don't control it, yes. Because,
mm-hmm.
See, I have fire in all three. My sun, moon, and ascendant are fire. So I have to be very careful. I've stepped on my tongue several times.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned to be careful.
there is in wands, in that same, in the lack of control, the will to action, the cruelty, and the lack of thought, there is the possibility of abuse, of physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
There's the possibility of bullying. There's a possibility of the psychopath, or at least the sociopath.
Mm-hmm.
The person who does without thought, without regret, without control, who explodes and doesn't take it back. So you can be sorry, but a psychopath just does it and doesn't care. Never
right.
is sorry.
Right, right. So actually, on a more general level, you're talking about anger.
That's
too.
Right.
Anger as energy.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So that's one version of it. When anger comes out as explosions of sheer force, you may not even be looking at the usual reasons for anger. You know, there doesn't have to be a reason for it in the case of wands. It's just an explosion of sheer energy. Just like you were talking about the volcano.
Yep. When it's gotten to, like, you can hold it down so long,
mm-hmm.
but when it gets to a certain point, you can't hold it anymore. And it might be not anything that anybody would think that would set it off.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a volcano, you know, it builds up till it gets to a certain point, and then it blows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happens in hyperactive children, too,
mm-hmm.
where there's this buildup of energy, and it builds and builds and builds, and then they just, like, you know, have a tantrum.
Right.
So when you're looking at wands, when it comes up in a reading, be aware that there, too, is the possibility of explosive force with unpredictable results.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big issue. It means that wands provides the loose cannon effect.
Jumping ahead, think for a moment of the Ten of Wands. Okay, everybody always looks at this card and say, oh, it's burdens. You know, when you think of that, it's heavy. But think of it as wands energy on a scale of 1 to 10. And doesn't that totally transform that card for you? I mean, it's huge.
The Ten of Wands can carry anything. The Ten of Wands is like Atlas, can hold up the world. Never gets tired. Never drops the ball. The Ten of Wands is like the energy in the core of the sun. It burns and burns and burns and burns, and by so burning, sustains everything. We were talking a minute ago about this business of abstracts and you know, high philosophical concepts and stuff like that, and the possibility that it might or might not be difficult for any given person. On the other end of that spectrum, are you aware that there is a wheel on which the four suits are normally found, and that there's oftentimes the suits are given, in addition to the things we've talked about so far, they're given association with times of day and year. And you may or may not know that in there's a tradition. It's not the only tradition. There are others, but there's a tradition that associates swords with spring, wands with summer, cups with autumn, and pentacles with winter. And if you start and it also includes the idea of direction, with spring in the east, summer in the south, autumn in the west, and winter in the north. So what happens is that you have a line, a continuum, that connects pentacles and wands. Wands is purely explosive energy. Pentacles is absolutely still. It's earth. It's the other end of the same spectrum. And if you like things knowable, touchable, controllable, believable, dependable, totally non-explosive, you're looking at pentacles. And that's something we're going to talk about pretty soon. Isn't that a lovely segue? The next time we get together to do this particular class, we're going to be doing that end of the spectrum. So anyway, guys, we're pretty much coming to the end of our time, and I just wanted to ask before we go if you have any questions or comments that you'd like to add for the record.
I think this was very good to talk about the essence of the suit, even because it helps. Each card is individual, but to understand the essence of the suit, you're able to see it other places other than the cards.
I'm glad that it was helpful, because I was hoping that it would be.
It's very helpful.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any ambiguities or questions or, you know, doubts or uncertainties about this issue that, that we could use cleared up at this point? No? Okay. So in that case, what we're going to do then is adjourn for the evening. Don't go quite yet. And I just want to say thank you again very much for coming and sharing this, and we'll talk again soon. Okay.